You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Hey, just a reminder, Progressive Democrats of America are having their 10th anniversary party. You probably know the story of Tim Carpenter. He's the co-founder of PDA. And he had malignant melanoma, and it went away for a number of years with some new experimental drug, and it's back. And we're all showing up for Tim here. Jim Hightower is going to be there. Bernie Sanders is going to be there. John Nichols is going to be there. I'm going to be there. Tom Hayden's going to be there in Northampton, Mass., which is where Tim lives, on Saturday, May 10th. And you can join. You can sign up. You can buy a ticket. And I don't know how much they are. I don't have that on my sheet, but they're not going to be much over at pdamerica.org. So, and also at pdamerica.org, you can sign the petition to Bernie to run in the Democratic primary. I mean, we need good progressive voices. Speaking about the other side, this is interesting. The Koch brothers' secret bank takes another step out of the shadows. That's the headline by Chris Moody over at Yahoo News. Freedom Partners is apparently the new Americans for Prosperity, another new front group for Koch brother money or billionaire money that is affiliated with them. And they're starting to buy ads. This is really ironic. They're buying ads against Democrats running for re-election to the Senate, you know, people like Mark Begich and Mary Landrieu and whatnot, Mark Udall, Bruce Braley in Iowa. And they're running a three-week campaign, and the ad says, Begich, this is in the case of Alaska, Mark Begich, you know, he's a Democrat, he voted for Obamacare. Begich took thousands from the health insurance industry, and he supported Obamacare, which gave health insurance companies billions. Now, can you, okay, so let me get this right. The Koch brothers are attacking Democrats for voting for Obamacare because the money is going to health insurance companies. Would they prefer that we had done single payer? I mean, are they arguing that we should have done what I was arguing for, Medicare for all? Just, you know, every year drop the eligibility age by a decade so that, you know, the Medicare bureaucracy can ramp up to deal with the new sign-ons? Or are they arguing that there should have been a public option, that everybody should be able to buy Medicare on the exchanges? I mean, that would be a nice next step. Or are they just like, you know, hey, we'll just say any damn thing we can come up with just to make it look like this guy's a bad guy. Don't vote for him. It, you know, it's logic be damned. Which leads me to my question for the hour and maybe for the day. The last time I did this was 2 years ago. This was back in 2012. And in fact, you can find the thread over on our message board. And I don't remember who the right winger was that I had on that day. I think it was the guy who used to run the conservative website. He died of leukemia. In fact, we were trying to find a bone marrow donor for him on our program, and he came on and talked about how he was getting a stronger response from our show than from the right-wing shows that he was on, and in terms of people willing to help and how impressed he was by that. But it might have been somebody else. In any case, the challenge that I made was I'll give you 35 pieces of legislation in the last couple of decades, the Democrat, or in the last, you know, in since the New Deal, the Democrats have promoted and passed to help average working people more than billionaires. If you can name one, or can you name one piece of legislation? And this is my challenge to you today. Help me brainstorm this, because I want to throw this challenge out again, and maybe I'm wrong on this. Can you name one piece of legislation that has been proposed and passed by, and, you know, with majority Republican support, or as part of a Republican platform since the New Deal, that wasn't, you know, a simple, like, so Eisenhower expanded Social Security. But, they, you know, the Democrats really were pushing that, you know. But a Republican initiative that benefited working people more than it benefited billionaires. Since 1935. Since 1930. Can you come up with one? Now, here's my list for the, you know, the ones from Democrats. Democrats fought for Social Security. That was FDR. They fought for Medicare. That was LBJ. They fought for Medicaid. That was LBJ. They fought for welfare benefits. That was FDR and Harry Truman and LBJ. They fought for civil rights. That was LBJ. By the way, did you hear the president's speech today on this? Today was the 50th anniversary of LBJ signing the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Big deal. I was expecting in his speech he would at least call on Congress to pass that piece of legislation that will restore Title IV of the Civil Rights Act, you know, undo the damage that the Roberts Court did to the Civil Rights Act. He didn't. There wasn't, as far as I could tell, maybe I missed it. There was no call for action in the speech, so I was deeply disappointed. Maybe I missed something, though. I mean, it's entirely possible. Anyhow, Democrats fought for civil rights, and many Democrats are still fighting for civil rights. Democrats fought for unemployment insurance. Democrats fought for the National Labor Relations Board. Democrats fought for the 8-hour workday and the 5-day work week and workplace breaks and overtime pay. That's really a forfer, right? But that's item number 8. Number 9, Democrats fought for workmen's compensation. That was Woodrow Wilson. Democrats fought for the Americans with Disability Act. Now, this was passed by the 101st Congress, which was controlled by Democrats. George Herbert Walker Bush vetoed it, and they overrode his veto. The Americans with Disability Act, a Republican president, vetoed it, and Democrats overrode his veto. Holiday pay. Number 11. Number 12, medical leave bill. That was Bill Clinton got that through. Prevention of child labor, FDR. Number 13. Number 14, Minimum Wage Act, FDR. Number 15, workplace safety, OSHA. This was done by Democrats, even though Richard Nixon was president. Affirmative action with regard to racial discrimination. That was JFK. Women's rights, LBJ. Tax fairness. This has been a Democratic platform issue for decades and repeatedly. Veterans pay and benefits, increases in veterans pay and benefits, FDR, Harry Truman. Consumer protection, consumer bill of rights, that was JFK. Background checks to prevent felons from getting weapons, that was LBJ and Bill Clinton. Credit card holder bill of rights, that was Barack Obama. Funding our public schools, that was LBJ, among others. Grants for low-income people to attend college, LBJ, environmental regulations, the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act. These were all passed by Democratic Congresses during Richard Nixon's presidency. And, in fact, Nixon vetoed the EPA, or the Clean Air Act, rather, and they overrode his veto. Regulations, financial regulations for keeping Wall Street accountable. That was Dodd-Frank. That was Obama. Affordable care for everyone. That was Obamacare. Hate crime legislation, the Matthew Shepard bill, that was Obama. Children's health legislation for 11 million kids without health care, that was Obama. Voting Rights Act, LBJ. National voter registration, Bill Clinton. Largest deficit-cutting plan in history, that was Bill Clinton. The Clayton Antitrust Act, Woodrow Wilson. Securities Exchange Act, FDR. National School Lunch Program, Harry Truman, number 35. So there's 35 things that helped the working people of this country more than they helped the billionaires. Can you name one that helped the working people more than the billionaires that was proposed, advanced, and put into place by Republicans since the Great Depression?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Even one. We'll see. 15 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's see here. Amy in Madison, Wisconsin, watching on Free Speech TV. Hey, Amy, what's on your mind today?
Well, I heard Andy Young say this. I wanted your opinion about this. He said the president could sign an executive order allowing Social Security cards to have photographs that could be used for IDs.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know if he could or not. It makes sense that he could, because the Social Security Administration is administered by the executive branch, and the executive branch ought to be able to do that. I don't know that that would satisfy the Republicans who are trying to do voter suppression, because then they would start saying, well, you know, now you've got to prove that you're a citizen to get Social Security. You know, I think it's more important to just say these are stupid laws. we don't have a voter fraud problem in the United States. The problem that we have is that not enough people are voting, and the Republicans want fewer and fewer people to vote, and that's what's going on.
Yeah, also to register more people, but registration takes IDs often.
Right, right. Increasing.
That's why I think somehow he said. Well, Andy Young thought it was very doable.
Was this, you're not talking about Andrew Young, the former mayor of Georgia. You're talking about somebody else.
No, Andy Young, who was in the Civil Rights Act.
Oh, he did. Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I thought, that might be a doable thing.
Yeah.
I'm guessing
if Andrew Young proposed it, that it's possible. I don't think that he would propose something that was just a pipe dream.
Yeah, but in Wisconsin anyway,
yeah.
I think we're going to pale the latest voting rights suppression.
Mm-hmm.
John Nichols, we were at something for unions, and I asked him, and he said, yes, we're going to appeal that on equal protection.
Yeah, the 14th Amendment. That would be a good basis for it. It would be a very good basis.
Well, anyway, Tom, I just wanted to propose that.
Okay. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it, Amy. Let me think about it and see what I can come up with. Steve in Rochester, New York. We got a minute, Steve. You got a bill that the Democrats or that the Republicans passed that actually has helped average working people?
Sure. The Taft-Hartley law.
Taft-Hartley. How did that help working people by allowing employers to basically bust unions?
Well, you see the whole thing, Tom.
In the states that have Taft-Hartley, the states that have adopted right to work for less, workers' wages have gone down. I mean, that's a undisputable fact. States that didn't adopt Taft-Hartley, workers' wages are higher. So Taft-Hartley is another one of those bills that the Republicans pushed through that helped the fat cats, not the average working person.
That isn't true. That isn't true.
It is true.
No, wait a minute. I can, Tom, you're going to let me have a chance?
I'm listening.
Okay. The Taft-Hartley law was right at the end of the war when all the veterans were trying to get jobs and the unions were shutting everybody off. You cannot become an electrician in New York. You cannot become a plumber in New York City unless you are in the family. You can't become a sandman.
Right, unless you're a union member. I got it, Steve. I got it. It wasn't passed at the end of the war. It was passed in 46. Or 47. Welcome back. We will continue with our challenge, legislation that helps average working people, in just a moment. But Simon Deng is with us. He is a Sudanese human rights activist, a former child slave. Simon, it's been some years since I've seen you and talked with you. How are you?
Hi, Tom, it's Maria Sliwa, the publicist for the event. Simon couldn't hold any longer because we've got a lot of press here and he's about to give his presentation as well as Joe Madison. But
okay.
It's a fantastic turnout, and the people of South Sudan, particularly the Shuluk Nation, are getting their message across. So it's a good thing, and thank you so much for spreading the word.
Okay, you've got it. Is there a website that you'd like us to mention so that people can find out more about this? Hang on, just I've got Joe apparently on line 10, so I'm going to hop over to him. Thank you very much. Okay. Joe?
Yeah,
hey
Tom.
Joe,
how are
Madison.
You?
Tell me what you're up to there, brother.
We are in New York in front of the Ugandan mission and preparing for an arrest that, quite honestly, asking Uganda to stay out of this war, this conflict between the rebels and the South Sudan government. You know, my involvement goes back almost a decade, and I watched this country, the newest country on the planet, Tom, I watched it being born,
right.
And now it is torn apart. We're literally talking about 2 million people who are displaced, mostly women and children, from their homes. We're talking about the possibility of starvation and for millions. Tens of thousands have been killed. And you, as you know, you went to South Sudan to deal with the issue of slavery.
With
and
you.
Now this country, this new country, South Sudan, is being torn apart, basically over the struggle of two individuals, the president of South Sudan and the rebel leaders.
Right.
So I'm here with approximately 25 people. And several of us are going to be arrested in front of the Ugandan mission to basically send a message that they should stay out of the war. But I'm here also to encourage the president to take direct action and sanctions against the rebel groups and anyone else.
The president of the United States.
That's right. And he did issue a very strong statement calling on sanctions against the rebel group. And it's now, I think, beyond threats. This is a time to act.
Joe, do you want to give a little bit of background about how is Uganda getting involved in this conflict in South Sudan?
Well, as people know, geographically, Uganda is a neighboring country,
right,
of South Sudan, and they have, in essence, taken sides in this issue, and they're allowing troops to go back and forth. Many of the Ugandan troops are involved in the war, and it just escalates the problem.
Are they taking the side of the rebels?
Has its own problems.
Is Uganda taking sides with the rebels, Joe?
Well, that's they very well may be playing both sides against the middle in this one.
Uh-huh.
You know, there is the possibility of annexing parts of South Sudan, some of the most fertile land in that part of the country. And so it is not clear what the government of Uganda is up to. They could be playing both sides against the middle, and then they would end up supporting the winner.
Right. Yeah. So this could get very messy. So you're asking for Uganda to...
That this war has to stop. This is not what we went to southern Sudan for.
Right.
This is not what you went for.
Yep.
This is not what I went there for. We didn't go there. This is like thousands of and tens of thousands of Americans and people around the world wanted to see happen with the Darfurians. This is not what we wanted. And I was there when that flag, that South Sudanese flag, rose up on that flagpole. And every country, including and the United Nations, but every country pledged support to this fledging country, this new country, and it is now the time to provide its support.
Other than joemadison.com, Joe, is there a website where people can get a little more information about what you and Simon?
I would tell you to go to joemadison.com.
Okay.
And we will try to get as much information there. We do have the president's statement there. He signed an executive order calling on sanctions, and that's placed there.
Right, great. We will also put a link to joemadison.com on our website.
This arrest should be taking place in a few minutes, so I'm going to go.
Okay. Joe, thanks so much for being on our program, and good luck.
You. All right, Tom.
Keep in touch. Thank you. We will, that's interesting. These guys are doing civil disobedience in front of Simon Deng, Joe Madison, in front of the Ugandan embassy in New York, I believe. So this would be the embassy to the United Nations rather than the embassy to the United States. And for more information, go over to joemadison.com, Joe Madison's website. Joe, of course, does the Joe Madison Show. He's on Sirius XM every weekday, 6 to 10 a.m. on Channel 110. And you can also tweet Joe at Black Eagle Power, Black Eagle Power, at Black Eagle Power. And remarkable. So back my original question, can you name successfully, we had one guy who called and said, what about Taft-Hartley? You know, one piece of legislation that the Republicans passed that benefited the average working guy rather than the billionaires. And Taft-Hartley does not qualify. Maybe you've got a wacky idea. Maybe a suggestion. Maybe nobody can think of anything. Really? Come on, there's got to be at least one. We'll be right back. It's 28 minutes past.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Meanwhile, the Paul Ryan budget passed the House today, and the president gave a speech commemorating LBJ and the Civil Rights Act. We are back on. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back. Okay. So, this is interesting, very, very interesting. Any piece of legislation that was proposed by Republicans, championed by Republicans, that was a Republican idea and helped the average American. Got one for me? David in Rolling Meadows, Illinois. Oh, you want to get back to health care?
Quick point, and then I want to actually go ahead and go with this legislation question as well. The point you were missing is that the Republicans wanted to have more competition between healthcare providers, so they'd have to provide a better value to customers, which would put less money in their pockets, as opposed to what the current system and the Obamacare reforms have done. Just a side point on that. You kind of skipped over that being the...
Are you talking about the Republican proposal to allow the health insurance industry to go around state insurance regulators the way that the Nixon administration, I believe it was, maybe it was the Reagan administration, changed the credit card industry so that we ended up... used to be individual state credit banking regulators could regulate credit cards. And so you always had an advocate within your state who you could go to, and then, you know, they went to a federal system, and everybody, all the credit cards are now issued in South Dakota because they've got the laxest standards. They allow the credit card companies to screw you the hardest, and the Republican proposal for health insurance was to do the same thing with health insurance. Are you serious?
First off, yeah, I'm serious. Second off, you're completely wrong. That's not what the Republican proposal was. It's not like they would...
Yeah, the Republican proposal was allow health insurance to be sold across state lines. In order to do that, you have to violate the 10th Amendment states' rights of individual states to regulate and to regulate the insurance companies within their state and to protect their citizens within their state. It's a totally anti-10th Amendment argument. I'm surprised that Republicans would make it. But it helps out the insurance company. Sure, you know, they will figure out which state will give them the lowest regulatory standards, and they'll all move to that state, just like the credit card companies did. How is that to the benefit of consumers?
Well, because you don't necessarily have to do that. The Republican proposal wasn't to flat out just say, you know what, do whatever you want, and to characterize it as that is intellectually dishonest. But
no, I think you're being intellectually dishonest. To say that you should be able to sell health insurance across state lines is to say that you are no longer honoring states' rights. You are no longer honoring the right of individual states to protect their citizens, to be answerable to their citizens, of those state governments, those state governors, those state legislators, and those state insurance commissioners to be responsible to the people who elected them.
Then you can say that about every other industry that's allowed to operate across multiple states. That's ridiculous.
No, you could, and I would say that about credit cards. I would like to see this proposed, this Republican...
manufacturing and car companies and everything else that's allowed to operate across state lines, because that's fundamental.
Actually, David, you got it wrong. Car companies are not allowed to operate across state lines, for example. California said, you know, we're having a smog problem here in California. We're not going to put up with it anymore. If you want to sell a car in California, you've got to put a catalytic converter on it and stop the smog. And the auto industry said, holy cow, that's a sixth of the U.S. economy. We better start putting catalytic converters on our cars. Had California been forbidden to have that state's right, like you're suggesting states should be forbidden with regard to health insurance, like Paul Ryan suggested states should be forbidden to do with health insurance, had California been forbidden to have the state's right to say we are going to set our own emission standards for automobiles, then California would still have a smog problem.
So you're in favor of letting larger states bully smaller states into doing what they want?
No smaller state had to do anything.
That's like saying, you know what, I know you have a problem, or at least I think you have a problem, with Texas deciding what textbooks we have. I'm pretty sure I recall you talking about that. It's the same thing. So you're okay with, let's say, having creationism in science textbooks, right? That's fine, because Texas is a large part of the
My problem with Texas is that the Texas Board of Education has been politicized, and that Texas is such
California
a...
California hasn't? Come on.
Actually, in some states, no, it hasn't. And Texas is such a large purchaser of textbooks that they've been able to be the tail that wags the dog of the textbook manufacturers. But that, you know, that's a far more nuanced argument. But still, you're arguing, you know, okay, let's say I am in favor of Texas being able to define the standards for Texas. And actually, I am. I'm being consistent here. You're the one who wants lowest common denominator across the United States, no states' rights. And I don't understand why a Republican would take that position. Why would a Republican be opposed to the 10th Amendment?
Well, I don't think that it's a fundamental opposition to the 10th Amendment.
Well, the 10th Amendment says that the states can establish laws, for how things go in their own state. I mean, you know, it's...
And the Commerce Clause says that the federal government can regulate commerce between the states.
Okay, so you're making Bobby Kennedy's argument for why the Commerce Clause could be used to integrate lunch counters in Mississippi. You're making a Democrat's argument. Why would a Republican make...
No, I'm making the current argument as has been interpreted by the Supreme Court and by our government that the Commerce Clause basically lets the federal government regulate everything, and that's an entirely separate...
It doesn't let them regulate everything. It allows them to regulate things having to do with civil rights.
It allows them to regulate things that happen within a state.
Okay, David, if your assertion is that the Republican proposal to allow to forbid states from regulating health insurance within their own boundaries, if you're saying that that's your submission for my contest, you know, we can debate whether or not it would be a good thing, but the fact of the matter is Republicans proposed it, but they didn't get it passed. And so my contest was, can you name one piece of legislation that the Republicans proposed and got passed? I beg your pardon, Chief?
This was the second thing that I wanted to get into you with. And before I do that, I kind of have to raise an issue with the question itself. I think it's loaded.
I'm sorry. Say that again, David.
The challenge, the contest you have,
yes,
is a loaded question. Every example you stated is effectively an expansion of government oversight or government expenditure. And by using what you said as a definition, the only way that a party can help the middle class is by spending more money or making the government regulate something to a greater extent, which I think is wrong. For example, I think that several of the things you stated that were examples of Democrats helping the middle class at the expense of the wealthy are just plain destructive to everyone.
Right, preventing child labor.
Including things like the minimum wage regulation.
Minimum wage.
For union protectionism,
yeah,
in general.
Okay, but, you know,
I'll give you an example of that one, not necessarily a union, but many states have...
Are you asserting that before the minimum, that after the minimum wage laws were passed, that low wage workers were worse off than
have these sort of
than the,
union
then, okay you know you're just gonna we're going in circles and he's just gonna try and shout over me. Steve, it's your turn to try and shout over me. Steve in Haymarket, Virginia.
Oh, I won't do that. No, it's the Civil Rights Act was actually passed by the Republicans.
Well, it was passed by Republicans in the Senate. Everett Dirksen, Lyndon Johnson. In fact, today President Obama mentioned this in his speech. How LBJ went to Everett Dirksen and said, Everett, if you can get the Republicans on board for this, 200 years from now, there's only going to be two names that people remember: Abraham Lincoln and Everett Dirksen. And Everett Dirksen, you know, got on board with it. But that was proposed by Lyndon Johnson. It was proposed by Robert Kennedy and by John Kennedy. And in fact, Johnson's famous speech, he said, and I quote, it may take me a minute to find it here, but I can't find the exact quote. But anyway, he said basically there would be no more fitting tribute to John and Robert Kennedy than the passage of this law that they worked so hard for. This was not a Republican proposal.
Well, yeah, but the Republicans passed it. It was being filibustered by Al Gore and Fulbright. So, I mean, but in other words, that they were responding. Now, of course, the Democrats were the ones who established the concept of segregation.
The Democratic Party, you're right. The Democratic Party from roughly the 1860s, well, from the Civil War until the 1940s. Well, maybe arguably the 1930s, had been the party of segregation. And in the South, the Democratic Party was the party of segregation right up to 64. And that's why when Lyndon Johnson signed that law, he famously said either to Bill Moyers or to somebody in Bill Moyers' presence, you know, if I sign this law, the Democrats are going to lose the South for a generation. And again, something that the president repeated in his speech today. But this was a Democratic initiative. Steve, can you come up with a Republican initiative that helped the average person rather than the billionaires? Anything in the last 100 years?
Well, certainly. Any time you have free market principles and
anytime you have free market principles, the rich get richer and the working class gets screwed.
The rich get created.
And the working class gets screwed.
Now, the working class does not get screwed. They get to move on to another employer.
Why is it from Reaganomics until today that even though productivity has continued to increase at the same rate it had in the 100 years prior to that, wages have been flat?
Wages will increase if we get the government out of the business. And
right.
What's going on right now? There's the whole economy.
Steve, I'm not buying the magic, you know, pixie dust here stuff. It's 35 years. We've seen this stuff. It's nonsense.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
What Paul Krugman calls it, the confidence fairy, you know. If only we get rid of the regulations, confidence will come back to the marketplace. And they'll start paying their workers. No, they won't. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Patrick in Santa Cruz, California. You've got a proposal for something Republicans did.
Yeah.
What is it?
Am I on?
Yeah, you're on.
Yeah.
Here.
I think they didn't they lower the speed limit to 55 miles an hour?
No, that was Jimmy Carter. He lowered it to 55, and
darn it.
Yeah, during the energy crisis, I think Nixon might have talked about it, but Carter took a lot of flack for that. I may be wrong. It was during that time, and it was in response to the energy crisis, that was caused by the Arab oil embargo. But I think that it was Carter. Let me look.
Right.
Shano is Googling it right now. 1974. Okay, so that would have been Jerry Ford. Huh. Okay, well, maybe you've got one, Patrick. The Jerry Ford lowered the speed limit to, was that down to 55? The initial, down to 55? 73, 74, yeah.
About the Republican cause or anything.
Okay. Well, you know, how did that help the average working person?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it made the roads safer or something like that.
Yeah, it did, actually. It made the roads safer, and it saved people a little bit of money. So, okay. Let me write that down.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, thank you, Patrick. That's, you know, we've got to keep track of these things. Dave in Armstrong, Wisconsin, you got something?
Yeah, hi, Tom. The Federal Aid Highway Act of 1956, signed by Eisenhower, and it was promoted by Eisenhower from his days in the war.
Right.
He wanted a he saw the importance of a good road system. It did provide a lot of jobs. However, looking back on it, it probably promoted the automobile as a primary mode of transportation, neglected the railroads a lot as far as public, you know, the
right.
passenger transportation.
What year was that? Did you say it was 56?
1956. That was the Federal Aid Highway Act.
Right, okay.
Signed. And anyway, that's one.
But he had a Democratic legislature at that
Republican
time.
Ideas or anything.
But that is that was Eisenhower's suggestion, and yeah.
Yes,
okay.
he was a champion of that because of his experience in the war.
Yeah.
You know the importance
well, the,
of good
the,
roads. And,
yeah. The story is that he, you know, the Highway Act required that periodically there'd be 5 mile straight stretches so that we could land airplanes in a case of emergency. Turns out that was just an apocryphal story, but. Basically, Eisenhower was being a Keynesian. You know, he knew that he had to stimulate the economy. In order to do that, he had to put people to work. He had a national recession. And And so, okay. All right. We're getting a few. That's good. Dave,
good talking to you.
Thank you very much. Jerry in Santa Fe, New Mexico. You got something?
Hey, Tom. Yes, George Herbert Walker Bush in 1980 called Reagan's plan voodoo economics. he lost.
He
Reagan instituted voodoo economics, and Bush finally became president in 68. And when he retreated from Reagan's voodoo economics, he attempted to go back to proper economics, Keynesian. And he was soundly defeated by the Republicans and Perot and Clinton.
Yep. Yeah, he raised taxes after he said, read my lips. George Herbert Walker Bush. It's not quite a piece of legislation, but it's a good point, Jerry. Thank you. Okay, we're trying to come up with anything that the Republicans have done that helps the average working person more than it helps the billionaires. Medicare Part D doesn't count because that helped the built into that law was the requirement the government could not negotiate pharmaceutical prices. So it was really a giant welfare program for the billionaires and the pharmaceutical companies that were owned by the billionaires or that created the billionaires. But somebody called and suggested that lowering the speed limits, 1974, that was probably Jerry Ford. That was in response to the Arab oil embargo. That was a good thing. And in 1956, Eisenhower proposed the Highway Act. Now, he had a Democratic Congress, so Democrats helped him pass that. But this was Eisenhower's idea, and it was named after Eisenhower. So, and somebody else suggested in 1980, George Herbert Walker Bush did something good when he called Reaganomics voodoo economics. But, you know, he kind of later had to eat those words. Robert in Albuquerque, listening on KABQ, you think you have an answer to this challenge?
Yeah, don't jump down my throat, Tom. I was going to suggest Medicare Part D, but because I'm a senior citizen and most of modern medicine involves drugs, not so much therapy or heart transplants or other things poor people don't usually get an opportunity to participate in, like rich people's medicine, I couldn't afford the drugs I'm on now.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for Medicare Part D. So even though the billionaires and the pharmaceutical companies are laughing all the way to the bank, I couldn't do what the doctor says is in my interest without that.
Okay.
But I did want to make
that is a good point
here now. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I said that's a good point. Go ahead.
But anyway, I wanted to make a comment here locally in Albuquerque. The Department of Justice today released their findings about excessive force in the Albuquerque Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the Department of Justice website, and there have been like 35 killings since 2009 or 10, and a lot of them unjustified, where cops just shoot, and the problem is the department's been hiring a lot of these ex-military that are trigger-happy instead of liberal arts graduates that know how to think and talk to people and teach them how to shoot a gun last. Yeah. Because as a good police officer, that's the last thing you're going to need to do is actually pull out your gun and shoot somebody.
Well, in fact, most police officers go their entire lives without discharging their weapon in the course of their...
they're basically taking over the police department, and they may even put officers on trial. trial for, well, probably not murder, but maybe manslaughter or something like that. They basically ruled that there have been tons of excessive violence and force. Yeah. There have been a lot of protests here in towns.
Yeah.
They've actually graffitied and tagged three police stations here in town.
Wow.
There have been thousands of people out in the streets marching. And it's finally coming to a head today.
Is there a racial element to this? Has this been white cops against Hispanics, or is this just cops against the people?
No, the cops are mixture. Usually it's a white or a Hispanic guy.
Right.
Here, half of the Hispanic guys look white anyway. It's not like Mexico.
So it's cops being cops, basically.
They have Hispanic names, but basically they're picking on poor people, homeless people, people with mental issues that aren't in institutions.
Yeah.
And there are some real criminals, but basically they're shooting when they don't have to shoot. They were chasing one guy. He threw his gun down and kept running, and they shot him anyway.
Yeah.
And they saw him throw his gun down.
Yeah.
And they just shot a homeless man camping out in the foothills of the Sandia Mountains. And he was mentally ill. And
Robert, I got to move along. But thanks for the heads up on that and the report. This is happening all over the country. This increased militarization of our police department, and as I think you correctly point out, unfortunately, I don't want to speculate on who they're hiring. I think that we need to have higher standards for our cops, and we need to have better pay for our police. I feel the same way about our teachers. Our police are our present, and our teachers are our future, and we are not investing enough in either one of them. Thanks a lot for the call, Robert. Gary in Colorado Springs, Colorado, you have an answer to my challenge?
Perhaps. This may be a stretch, but
okay.
In 1973, President Richard Milhouse Nixon passed the Health Maintenance Organization Act, which required employers with 25 or more employees to offer federally certified HMO options.
Right.
And part of that was better oversight of physicians.
Right. Are you familiar with the White House tapes on that?
I heard the tape where
Nixon says, if we can figure out where our buddies can make a buck on this, I'll be in favor of it.
What I heard was,
it was Nixon talking to Haldeman.
Came in and said, I think this guy, Kaiser out in California has got a good idea going here on this
right.
HMO thing. And, I think we ought to take a look at it.
Yeah.
And, I think that's how that all started.
Yeah, and Nixon said something to the effect of, and you know, we've got to see if our guys could figure out a way to make a dollar on it, because at that time Kaiser was not. I think Kaiser still is not for profit. So 1973 Nixon the HMO Act. We'll put that in the list as a candidate. Thank you, Gary. I appreciate it. David in Chicago, we got just about a minute here until the end of the hour. It's yours.
Yeah, I wouldn't put the HMO thing in there because of the way, if you hear the conversation, it clearly wasn't on benefit for the little guy. But I would offer two Republicans currently in the Senate, one in the House, are looking out for the little guy. Jeff Sessions and Chuck Grassley, who have been consistently voting, trying to get legislation passed to reform the H-1B and L visa laws, and they seem to get Democrats involved, but the Democrats, like Durbin, seem to see it more as a bargaining chip, whereas Durbin and Grassley have consistently come out in favor of the little guy, as well as Rohrabacher. If you look at Rohrabacher's speech right after interview right after the president's speech in January, see that in C-SPAN. And then this
this is not, you know, I acknowledge what you're saying, David, but it is not a piece of legislation that they've succeeded in passing. But you're right, and I know you call a lot about this, but you're absolutely right. This is a huge issue. Thank you very much for the call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Now, I actually cannot claim this as my list. And I think that Danielle tweeted it out or put it on Facebook. We should attach the caveat to it. I don't remember where it came from. This is, you know, it's on our message board. Somebody posted it on our message board, transcribed it, I believe, from my reading it on the air back in 2012, 2 years ago. But I know that I didn't compile this list. I got it from somebody else. Somebody had posted it on the internet and I just read it on the air. So, and I'm sorry, I can't give attribution to who came up with it. But it's 35 things that the Democrats proposed. These were Democratic ideas. Democrats proposed, Democrats fought for, Democrats passed. You know, today, Lyndon Johnson, President Obama gave a very nice speech today. I was surprised he didn't specifically call for the passage of the legislation that would, you know, restore the Voting Rights Act. Frankly surprised there was no call for action that I could discern at all in the speech when he was talking about Lyndon Johnson, and Lyndon Johnson was all about taking names and kicking butt, taking action, making things happen, making things work. But it was a nice speech about how LBJ came from poverty and he'd seen poverty and he knew discrimination. He came from the South and he resolved that he was going to do something to make this country a better place. He passed proposed the Civil Rights Act 50 years ago now. It was signed into law actually on July 2nd by LBJ. But this is apparently when it got dropped in the Senate or thereabouts. I'm not sure the provenance of this date, but here's these 35 things the Democrats fought for. They fought for Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. Social Security was FDR, Medicare, Medicaid, LBJ, welfare benefits for people down on their luck, poor people, FDR, civil rights, LBJ, unemployment insurance, FDR, National Labor Relations Board, FDR, the 8-hour work week, the 5-day work week, the 8-hour work day, the 5-day work week, workplace breaks and overtime pay, that's FDR, workers' comp, it was Woodrow Wilson, the Americans with Disabilities Act, this was the 101st Democratic Congress, it was vetoed by George Herbert Walker Bush, holiday pay, this was FDR, Medical Leave Act, this is Bill Clinton, the Prevention of Child Labor, FDR, the Minimum Wage, FDR, OSHA, the Workplace Safety Act, this was proposed, this is, you know, the Democrats controlled Congress during much of the Nixon administration, this was proposed and pushed through by Democrats, as was, by the way, the Clean Air Act. Nixon vetoed that, and they overrode his veto. The Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, you know, the environmental regulations, basically the EPA. Women's rights, it was LBJ, affirmative action, JFK. Tax fairness, this has been a platform issue of the Democrats since the 30s. Veterans pay and benefits, FDR. Consumer protections, the Consumer Bill of Rights, JFK first proposed this. The most recent iteration of that, arguably, is the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, which was passed under Obama. Credit card holders, Bill of Rights, that was Obama. gun laws, you know, the background checks to prevent felons from getting weapons. That was LBJ and Clinton. Grants for low-income people to attend college. That was LBJ. Clean Water Act. I mentioned that. Financial regulations, regulating Wall Street. The Dodd-Frank Act. That was Obama. Affordable Care legislation, Obama. Hate crime legislation, the Matthew Shepard Act, Obama. Children's health legislation, 11 million kids this without health care. This was even before Obamacare. This was Obama. Voting Rights Act, LBJ, National Voter Registration, Bill Clinton. Largest deficit cutting plan in history. This was Bill Clinton. He actually got us to a balanced budget. The last president, by the way, who proposed a balanced budget was Jimmy Carter. Before Bill Clinton. The Clayton Antitrust Act, Woodrow Wilson, he was updating the Sherman Act, which went back to the 19th century. The Securities and Exchange Act, FDR, National School Lunch Program, that was Harry Truman. And then here's some, these are not on the list that we've posted on our Facebook page and tweeted out. Flipocrat.com has a list of just things since Obama became president. The largest middle class tax cut in the history of the United States is passed under the Obama administration. Chrysler was saved. GM was saved. The government loans have been repaid. 800,000 monthly job losses are now monthly job gains. Education spending has increased. Student loan costs have decreased. Hate crime laws were strengthened. The Affordable Care Act, the Children Health Insurance Program, CHIPS, was expanded. More enforcement of child labor laws, Wall Street reform, that would be Dodd-Frank, credit card reform, Dodd-Frank, predatory lending to soldiers was restricted, troops have been paid for stop-loss time. This is all on the Obama watch, and most of it in the first year or so. Torture was stopped, spending was increased for the Veterans Administration, women can now serve on submarines, equal pay for women, the Lilly Ledbetter Act, nuclear arms reduction and disposal. British Petroleum agreed to pay $20 billion for the damage that they did, although that's, you know, still being litigated. But it saves us taxpayers $20 billion. The EPA was strengthened. They were given the power to regulate carbon dioxide. The FDA's powers were broadened. The 9/11 responders' health care funding, this is something the Republicans fought, the Bush administration fought. They didn't want to have to pay for the cancers that the 9/11 responders got. Obama got that through. Don't ask, don't tell was passed. And then this is a list. I have no idea where this list came from. It was posted over at Democratic Underground back on February 15th. But it says this is sort of, you know, passed health care reform, passed the stimulus, passed Wall Street reform, ended the Iraq war, drew down the Afghanistan war, eliminated Osama bin Laden, toppled Muammar Gaddafi, saved the U.S. auto industry, saved the U.S. banks, saved the U.S. economy from a depression, improved America's image abroad, boosted fuel efficiency standards, dramatically cut oil imports, invested heavily in renewable technology, increased supports for vets, passed credit card reforms, improved food safety laws, improved the school nutrition, expanded hate crimes protections, advanced women's rights, got an agreement with Iran on nuclear weapons, got an agreement with Syria on chemical weapons, avoided going to war in both cases, cut the deficit substantially. I mean, the deficit right now is about a third of what it was when Obama came into office. And then this piece that was posted over at DU back on February 15th says, and his presidency isn't over, but the Republicans say it's a failed presidency. Aren't you tired of the Republicans yet? So anyhow, these are some of the modest accomplishments of Democrats in the 20th century. And I put the question out, what have the Republicans done? Well, one person called and said in 1974, now this was in response to the Arab oil embargo, either Nixon or Ford, it must have been Ford because I think Nixon went down in 73. Didn't he resign in 73? It's my recollection. So 74 would have been Jerry Ford. He was a Republican, that he imposed speed limits. He lowered the speed limit to 55. And that benefited the average person more than it benefited the billionaires. It cut our consumption of oil, and the billionaires were in the oil industry. But you'll recall the billionaires fought back. Ronald Reagan in the 80s said to the states, if you don't raise your speed limit back up to 65, I'm going to cut off your federal highway funds. And so states took their speed limits back up to 65 or 70 during the Reagan administration. One person proposed the Eisenhower, you know, I'm asking just was that, can you think of one piece of legislation that the Republicans have proposed that has actually benefited working people more than billionaires? Medicare Part D, well, you know, it forbids the government from negotiating drug prices, so the government has to pay full retail. That's a $600 billion welfare program for Big Pharma. But maybe the Eisenhower Highway Act of 56.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
But then most Republicans today would say Eisenhower wasn't really Republican, that he was some kind of liberal. I mean, he ran on a platform of he'd expanded Social Security. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's see, some things Republicans have done. Oh, I've got to get, here we go. Is it Horacio in San Diego, California?
Hey, how's it going, Tom? Yes, Ronald Reagan, the Bradley bill.
Yeah.
To have ramps everywhere.
Oh, for wheelchair accessible folks.
Yes.
Now, that was proposed by Bill Bradley, who was a Democrat.
Oh, okay. I thought that was in there.
And I mean, it might be. I don't know. The Bradley bill. We'll have to look that up. Did Reagan champion it, or did he simply happen to be in the White House?
Remember, Bradley couldn't get into the White House because they had no ramps, and that was his buddy because he got shot with him. Reagan.
Oh, you're thinking of Brady, the Brady bill.
Yeah, Brady.
That was 1993. The Brady bill was passed.
So that was
passed during the Clinton administration.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Because there was no ramps for Brady to go into the White House, so then Reagan went past that. Well, I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think you're confusing that with the Medical Disability Act, the Americans with Disability Act, and that also was a Democratic initiative. The Brady bill that Reagan actually supported, and I don't know when it was passed. That I think you're thinking of, or not the one that you're thinking of, but the one that had to do with Jim Brady when he was Reagan's press secretary and he got shot in the head, and was to roll back assault weapons and regulate guns, basically. I mean, that was gun regulation that Ronald Reagan was in support of. But I don't think it got passed during the Reagan administration. We'll have to put that out to the, you know, maybe the folks in the chat room can track that down, or, you know.
That was
the Handgun Violence Protection Act, the Brady Act, and that was 1993. So that was also during Bill Clinton's administration. So these are things that were in response to Reagan's, guy getting shot. But this was done by Democrats, and it was done by Bill Clinton. So sorry, Horacio.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a start. It's a start. Okay. Louise in Orangeburg, South Carolina, watching on Free Speech TV. You have a proposal, a suggestion?
I actually have two observations, if I could share them.
Certainly.
Okay. One, I actually live in the District of Columbia, and in the District of Columbia, we have the Disabilities Administration. The people who are least served by Obamacare, who are not served at all, are autistic adults, which I never hear anyone speak about. If this is truly a comprehensive bill, it should cover them. Vincent Gray authored Bill 2-137, which is the dignity of the mentally retarded. Mm-hmm. Autism is not mental retardation.
No, it's not.
No, it does not. It doesn't fit that class of people at all. Disturbing trend in the District of Columbia and other places like Ohio I know of is that the autistic adults are now being declared incompetent in order for the state to take guardianship. Once they take guardianship, my assumption, I believe I'm right, is that they're able to claim even more money from the federal government.
The states can't, you mean, on behalf of the individuals. Okay, Louise, you're asking for somebody to look into it. I don't know the answers to those things. Thanks for highlighting the issue. Thanks for the call. And thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We will be back 20 minutes past the hour. Back. It's Thursday. By the way, let's get geeky. Just very briefly, this is my moment where I get to talk about science. And then we'll get back to, you know, this question. Have the Republicans done anything for anybody? Do you find it hard to concentrate and instead choose to procrastinate? Do you flip through TV channels with rapid speed and wait until the last minute to complete a work assignment? Well, it turns out procrastination might be in your genes. That's right. According to new research out of the University of Boulder, Colorado, procrastination may have a lot to do with your genetic makeup, and it's a relatively recent phenomenon. Scientists arrived at these results by surveying 181 pairs of identical twins and 166 pairs of fraternal twins. The scientists surveyed the twins in their ability to set and maintain goals and noted if any of them had an increased risk of procrastination or impulsivity. After studying the twin pairs, the scientists arrived at the conclusion that not only is procrastination and impulsivity in our genes, but it also may have helped our ancestors survive and evolve. And this is something I proposed back 20 years ago or thereabouts. In 1980, actually, was the very first time I published that. That's 34 years ago. My hunter-farmer hypothesis, that modern procrastination basically is what we used to call handling boredom well. It's risk aversion. It's saying, you know, I'm not going to leap into this. I'm not going to be impulsive. I'm going to think about this. I'm going to put it off. Whereas some people just jump into things. The neurochemical that regulates risk aversion versus risk desire is called dopamine. And the dopamine transport and the dopamine receptor genes are associated with this, and they determine how much dopamine is in your brain at any given moment. The more dopamine you have, the less you need stimulation. And the less dopamine you have, the more you need stimulation. And there's a whole long, complex reason for why that we need not go through. But my theory is that hunting-gathering people are low in dopamine. They're the distractible people, the impulsive people, they're low in dopamine. And that's why when you give them things like Ritalin, which raises dopamine, they suddenly become able to focus. Whereas people who easily focus a lot, they're relatively high in dopamine, which is why you give them Ritalin and they just act like they took too much coffee. And dopamine levels are genetically determined. And then culture selects for high and low dopamine in different parts of the world, different societies, whether they're hunting and gathering societies or farming societies. You will, and this science is in now. It's solidly, they've nailed this. Robert Moises with the Human Genome Project did the research on this with a collaborative effort with Yale University and the University of Beijing. And, you know, they looked at 600 groups around the world that in those societies like Japanese society, where it's been farmers for 3,000 years, the people who are successful in a farming society, a very focused society, they get to choose, they get their choice of offspring or of mates, and they procreate more frequently. All this is more evidence that my hunter-farmer theory was right back in 1980, and we need to tell people about this so they can find the right jobs and so we can reinvent our schools to accommodate them. So anyhow, that's new research. Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. Steve in Chicago. Hey, Steve. Thanks for listening to WCPT. You want to respond to this guy who said that the free market that Reagan helped the average working guy by decreasing regulations in the free market, although I'm not sure what he was talking about. I don't know of any decreased regulations. But
I certainly don't limit my commentary with regard to Ronald Reagan. This general, you know, neoliberal philosophy that, you know, seems to take hold every time we sort of develop amnesia in this country with regard to unregulated free markets that everyone likes to tout, you know, because they don't have the sort of institutional or personal memory, you know, that existed among those people who knew what it looked like. There's a reason why, you know, we had the kind of tax rate that we did in the 1950s, because those were the people who lived through the Great Depression as children. And then as adults realized that, you know what, regulation and a progressive tax rate that is, you know, fairly high for people making obscene amounts of money might actually make sense. And we understand the rationalization behind it because, you know what, my family didn't have dinner when I was 10 years old.
Right.
And so I understand the need for it. And it's nonsense that somehow the unregulated free market is going to translate into this trickle-down economic theory, which, again, is debunked theory. And so let's go ahead and ask ourselves, is there a time when this nation had big economic growth, because that's what they contend that you get, you know, and also you had everyone lifted up by that economic growth? Well, we do have an example of that. We have that in, you know, the Gilded Age when the Mellons, the Carnegies, the Rockefellers, the J.P. Morgans basically wielded more power than any elected official, including the president in this country.
Right.
at a time when the economic growth, the GDP of this nation, far exceeded anything that we've seen in our lifetimes.
Right, yes. But at the same time, poverty levels during that time were off the scale.
Nine out of ten Americans lived hand-to-mouth. I'm not talking about the poverty of today.
Right.
I'm talking about literally not knowing whether you were going to eat that night.
Right, instead of a poverty rate of 25 or 30%, we had a poverty rate of 90% during the Gilded Age.
Exactly. So, in other words, we had this great economic boom. We were growing our economy, and guess what? People like Carnegie and Rockefeller, J.P. Morgan, made Bill Gates look like a pauper.
Yep.
They were worth hundreds of billions of dollars. And as a result of which, you know, you've got things like the Homewood Steel Strike, which, guess what? You know, Andrew Carnegie was able, through his corporation, to hire a police force, the Pinkertons, which had actually more guns than the United States Army did at the time. You could hire that group of individuals to actually behave as your personal police force, which is what he did, and they ended up murdering.
Yeah, they did. Steve, thank you for that. Thank you for the history lesson.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Steve, call anytime. That is absolutely spectacular. Thank you. We will be right back. Bad and the very, very incarnadinely ugly, brought to you by the organic wine company, ecowine.com. The good. Michelle Bachelet, the newly inaugurated Chilean president, has already made waves with her plans to raise taxes on the rich and make education free for all Chileans. Now she's setting her sights on environmental policy. This week, Bachelet announced a plan to charge thermal power plants with a $5 carbon tax for every metric ton of carbon that they emit. The idea behind the tax is to help make Chile's emerging renewable energy sector more competitive with traditional sources of power. As the planet continues to warm, we need leaders who take bold action to fight climate change. Looks like Michelle Bachelet is one of those leaders. The bad. Congressman Mike Pompeo. The Republican Kansas congressman has just introduced a bill into the House of Representatives that, if passed, could stop the food democracy movement dead in its tracks. Pompeo's so-called Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act would ban states from passing laws requiring labels on GMO products. According to the congressman, his bill is all about standardization. He said, "We've got a number of states that are attempting to put together a patchwork quilt of food labeling requirements with respect to genetic modification of food. That makes it enormously difficult to operate a food system. What this bill attempts to do is set a standard." That standard, of course, runs roughshod over the rights of every American in all 50 states to know what's in their food. So much for that whole 10th Amendment states' rights thing. And the very, very ugly, Charles Murray. Earlier this week, the Bell Curve author and advisor to Texas gubernatorial candidate Greg Abbott told a crowd of students at the University of Texas that there have been no significant female original thinkers in any of the world's great philosophical traditions. Murray's remarks were in response to a question posed by a student who asked him if he still agreed with a 2005 paper he wrote that argued that women were not significant thinkers. That whole exchange was captured on video by the Lone Star Project.
There are certain traditions where women have been at the peak of accomplishment. In philosophy, you have Hypatia. That's the only name that comes to mind. She was not a significant original thinker in the estimation of historians of philosophy. And so, I still stick to that. Until somebody gives me evidence to the contrary, I'll stick with that statement.
Right. And Republicans wonder why they have trouble attracting female voters. That's just very, very ugly. Very interesting. Very interesting. Okay. So we have this, over at Crooks and Liars. The thing that got me started on this, thinking on this, was I was over at crooksandliars.com this morning when we were sitting around doing show prep and hatching schemes for what we were going to talk about today. Thank you, Danielle. And here's this headline. Not one law Republicans have passed has helped America in over 40 years. And then they say December 2nd, 1970 was the last time a Republican created something that benefits the greater good of society. Seriously, it's been 40 years since Nixon created the EPA. And my position is that actually the Nixon didn't create the EPA. It was created by the Democrats. Nixon vetoed the Clean Air Act. He tried to veto the EPA, and they overrode his veto. So at least that's my recollection of it. So I don't think that that was Nixon's. In fact, I know that that was not a Nixon's initiative. That was, it's what has happened. So let me just pick up some of your calls here. Frank in Montello, Wisconsin. Hey, Frank, the Republicans passed what?
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi, Tom.
I'm listening.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Hi.
Yeah, I wanted to respond to your question there. I thought perhaps OSHA had been passed under Dick Nixon, if I remember correctly. I'm not sure if it was the Democrats that pushed it or what. So.
Well, Dick Nixon had a Democratic legislature. They pushed through the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act over his veto. So if OSHA was passed during Nixon's presidency, it was almost certainly a Democratic initiative.
I see.
You got to find something that the Republicans actually said, this is our idea, we're in favor of this. The Republicans have been fighting workplace safety standards since the Lochner court. I mean, since the 19 teens, the famous case of the bakeries there was the case in New York but in any case, they've been fighting that forever. So I don't think that OSHA qualifies, but we'll check it out, Frank. We're going to write it down and check
Alrighty.
It out. Alrighty. Thanks a lot for the call. Tom in Beatrice, Nevada, or excuse me, Nebraska, you have a proposed Nixon did something good for the average working
show,
person.
Tom. In 19, if you take cynical election year politics as a plus, in 1972 Nixon increased Social Security by 20%, and
really?
Then it was rolled back in the Reagan administration with the Greenspan Commission. Those are the so-called notch babies that people of a certain age have heard about.
Right. Well, that's interesting.
20%.
That's a significant increase. That held for basically about a decade.
Until Greenspan rolled it back to make Social Security fiscally sound forever.
Right. Huh. Okay, so now was that by executive action?
He needed congressional approval, and he got it.
Okay.
But it was definitely Nixon's election year initiative to get the old folks' vote. He raised it twice in that year.
Okay, so I need to write this down and add it to the list here. We're developing a small list of things that Republicans have done. And as you correctly point out, that was an election year. In fact, in 72, who was Nixon running against?
He was running against the guy from North Dakota.
No. Humphrey was 68. It was McGovern, George McGovern, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
He was going to win by a landslide in any case, but he took no chances.
Right.
Yeah, that was when they had the dirty tricks and they eliminated Muskie and actually chose McGovern as their running.
In fact, there's a fairly strong case to be made that they put LSD in Ed Muskie's coffee. And then Muskie got up on the back of that flatbed truck up there in Maine and started crying about his wife, and his whole campaign fell apart. I think there was some suspicion that Chuck Colson was involved in that, although he's denied it. But interesting point. Tom, thanks a lot for the call. Okay, maybe, we're finding every now and then the Republicans do something that benefits average working people more than billionaires. Paul, although you could say getting himself elected in 72 benefited the billionaires more than the average working people, even if the price of it was increasing Social Security by 20%. Paul in Woodinville, Washington, listening to KBCS. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Interesting that George McGovern's name just came up, because I was watching on YouTube a couple of Sunday mornings ago a debate from 1997 between George McGovern and William F. Buckley Jr., both now gone to their reward, of course. And what this topic you have today, George McGovern put it to William F. Buckley, name a program that the majority of people on both sides of the aisle do not want to get rid of, a public program that do not want to get rid of, that was created by the Republicans and not the Democrats. See, so a lot of these programs that that we named, a lot of people want to get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
But Buckley could not name a program that most that we like, Social Security and Medicare,
right,
for instance. And I wouldn't count the increase in Social Security for Nixon, because that was a program that already existed.
You're right.
He also created SSI, Supplemental Security Income, but that was an existence of Social Security,
right,
the Department of Social Security.
Right.
So, and Buckley's response was just like your guest earlier was, well, if government would just get out of the way, we wouldn't need such programs. That sort of response, you know.
This was in 1997, you say?
Yes, it was a remarkable. I just checked it out, and I didn't plan to watch the whole thing. It was a 97 debate at Southeast Missouri University,
right,
between William F. Buckley Jr. and George McGovern. And that's just totally astonishing that name came up and this topic, because it's exactly what he asked William F. Buckley, is name one of these programs that most people don't want to get rid of that the Republicans created, and he couldn't name one.
Remarkable. If that's in the public domain, I'm going to have to track it down and play it. It's I just made a note. Paul, thank you for that.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Always good to hear from you. Bob in Chassel, Michigan. Hey, you've got something the Republicans are doing?
Yes, and it took quite a bit of research, at least for me, to find one. My first impulse was the Clean Air Act and Clean Water Act, but as you pointed out earlier, Nixon vetoed
them.
That.
Yeah.
But in 1972, Richard Nixon and the Canadians signed the Great Lakes Water Quality Agreement, which the International Joint Commission has been working with this country in dealing with Great Lakes water quality issues, areas of concern, and coordination of Superfund sites on the United States side.
Well, so, that's all, you know, well and good, but, you know, A, if it has anything to do with Superfund sites, it might be helping the billionaires more than the working people. Do you know that that's something that helps?
It's not. Superfund site is a national thing.
Right.
Area of concern is international.
Right.
Which is separate funding, but they often overlap.
Okay, 72, the Great Lakes Pet. Okay, well, check it out. Bob, thank you for the call. It's really rather difficult to find these things. I mean, you've really got to dig. I'm impressed that we're getting as many as we are.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Let me put a second question on the table. What would you suggest if you were advising the Republicans that they should propose that would help working people and help them get along? And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Benjamin in East Carondelet, Illinois. Benjamin?
Yeah, that's right.
Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
I am not quite sure what year he did it in. I think it might have been 73. I'm pretty sure it was after his reelection. But Nixon floated the gold standard. And that had, you know, deleterious short-term effects in the 70s. But over time, we've seen that the recessionary rate for a currency pegged to the gold standard is a hell of a lot higher than one that's, you know, floated on baskets of commodities.
Right.
So, you know, nowadays, especially with like the Paulite wing of the Republicans sort of, you know, on the ascent, I thought it was pretty courageous of Nixon actually to get rid of the gold standard.
I think he was backed into a corner where he had no choice, because what you had happening in the 70s was the Arab oil embargo caused such a spike in oil prices that was rippling through the economy as inflation. And all the time that we were on the gold standard, if our currency, if you needed more dollars to buy, you know, because inflation, the principal thing that drives inflation is not how many dollars are printed by the government. That's a misunderstanding most people have. It is if you have shortages in commodities, that's what will provoke inflation. For example, shortage of food is what produced the Zimbabwean inflation. It wasn't that they printed too much money. And so we had a shortage of oil, and it produced inflation in oil, and that inflation rippled across the economy. And because it took more dollars to buy the oil, And the law or the rule, the gold standard rule at that time, required that you have a certain ratio of gold on in stock at Fort Knox relative to the number of dollars circulating in the economy. Nixon was confronted with a choice. Either he had to go overseas and buy hundreds of billions of dollars worth of gold, or he had to simply say, we're not on the gold standard anymore. And, you know, buying gold like that would have just devastated our economy. And so he took us off the gold standard. I'm not sure that is the, you know, a Republican promoted policy that benefited the working person more than the billionaires.
Well, it's really not, but the only point that I'm getting at is that the Republicans for a century before Nixon had been sort of married to the gold standard. You know, you had McKinley in 1896,
sure,
you know, fighting Bryan on the issue. And even in the 70s, when the Republicans were more liberal, they still had sort of the gold bug wing.
Well, they still are. I mean, you know, Ron Paul represents the biggest strain of that in their...
Right, absolutely. But for Nixon, and I think Nixon did that a lot, which is why he sort of stands out from the rest of the generic conservatives in the GOP at the time and today. He sort of went out on a limb and bucked not necessarily the base of his party, but a significant element within it.
Yeah.
And
but see, he had the problem that he was president. He had to govern. He couldn't just govern based on slogans. He had to take into account the very real problem or the very real situation, the realpolitik of, to quote Henry Kissinger, his chief advisor.
Really quick on the second issue that he had brought up, what you would advise Republicans to do.
Yeah.
And this is probably some sort of utopian pipe dream, but have you heard anything about desktop manufacturing?
Desktop manufacturing. Are you talking about using these 3D printers?
Yeah. I realize that technical issues being what they are, that these are not going to lead to some sort of post-scarcity society. But I think that it might be interesting to see what would happen if we were to promote those through tax incentives.
Interesting. Okay. Benjamin, thank you for the call. Ten minutes before the hour, let's check with Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com. And by the way, we had Joe Madison and Simon Deng was going to be with us, but he got arrested before we had a chance to get him on the phone. But Joe and Simon were at the Ugandan embassy in the first hour of our program, hour and a half ago, doing, nonviolent civil disobedience to protest Uganda's involvement in the South Sudanese civil war. You were just over in South Sudan a few
weeks
ago.
Well, that's a huge issue, and they wanted Kyir Daeng, my foster son, to be part of it, but he's on one of those immigration things that...
he's on a visa that he could lose.
Oh, he could lose very quickly, so yeah. I said... I didn't even tell him about it.
Whatever.
But today is also the birthday of your mentor, 100 years
Miller.
Old. That's right.
Yeah.
And somebody who taught you all about your activism. So I just wanted to recognize that.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Ellen. And he started the Salem organizations all over the world.
And Tom is, and Louise have continued all that work, and that's really great. Okay. Lots going on, actually, in Washington, D.C. today. Surprise, surprise, the House passed the Ryan budget plan. Now, are you surprised about that? 219 to 205. Before that, Chris Van Hollen, who's a Democrat, had his own plan, and they actually allowed it to come to a vote. And it went down 163 for the yeses and 261 for the noes.
This was the so-called president's budget, not the progressive budget?
This was sort of the president's budget. That's right. So the president's budget is going basically nowhere, unfortunately. Some other things that are actually going to go nowhere. The ACLU actually came up with the Democracy Restoration Act. They didn't come up. They supported it. Sorry. And this was on voting rights. This is Ben Cardin of Maryland, John Conyers of Michigan. But you know that this Republican House is going to absolutely have it go nowhere.
You know,
fast.
I was surprised. This is basically, for people who don't know what you're talking about, the Voting Rights Act, a big chunk of it was blown out of the side of it by John Roberts and four right-wingers on the Supreme Court. And this legislation restores part of that, essentially. And I was surprised when Barack Obama today gave his, when President Obama gave his speech on the 50th anniversary of the signing of the proposing or passing or whatever the Civil Rights Act, of 64 that he didn't call for this piece of legislation. You know, I mean, he was talking about how LBJ got things done, and then he didn't call for anything to get done. Did I miss something?
You didn't miss anything.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I wish he had been more forceful.
Yeah.
Okay. The president did, though, have his private little huddle with Wendy Davis. As you know, she's a state legislator. She's the one that gave that long talk in Texas. The guy that is running against her dared her to have her picture taken, is Texas Attorney General Greg Abbott, to be publicly dared her to be seen with Obama. Well, she was seen with Obama, but even the pool didn't get a photo, so there's no photo of that. House Oversight Committee voted 21-12 today to hold
Sterilizes Committee.
That's right, to hold Ms. Lerner in contempt. And very interesting, actually, our friend Elijah Cummings from Maryland came out to what he had done and said that there were all of these constitutional experts that said you cannot hold somebody in contempt that takes pleads the fifth, and that they have tried to do that. The committee, they said, interviewed 39 people, reviewed 450,000 pages of arguments. The IRS spent $14 million on this investigation. There's no evidence to substantiate any one of Daryl Issa's claims that the White House was involved.
But Daryl Issa's sticking by it.
He's sticking by it, of course.
Yeah. As long as Fox News keeps going, you know, Benghazi, IRS. They're, you know, Daryl Issa's going to keep throwing them red meat as long as they keep.
Well, there's a lot of red meat that he's manufacturing. I mean, maybe we ought to have him go to the Cattlemen's Association. Okay. Senator King, Angus King, is an independent from Maine. As you know, he did not vote for the Paycheck Fairness Act yesterday. He said there were some things in there that he objected to. He is considering, if the Republicans take back the Senate, instead of caucusing with the Democrats, to caucus with the Republicans.
Well, that's interesting. You know, he might actually bring some sanity to the Republican caucus. Angus King?
He's
a bit of a loose cannon?
I would hope he would bring sanity. Let's hope his better angels take over.
Yeah. Or is this a decision that he would simply make because whoever's in power,
he's going to make it on whoever's in power,
so that he has the most leverage?
That's right.
Oh, jeez.
Exactly. He said, "I'm going to do what's best for Maine."
Right.
Right. By the way, a lot of people think that Senator Sanders is going to run for president.
I signed a letter and an email letter that went out to members of the Progressive Democrats of America. We've got over at pdamerica.org, a petition for Bernie to run for president as a Democrat.
Well, he was in New Hampshire this week.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting.
That's what I hear from my folks in New Hampshire.
Yeah, he's going to be in Massachusetts on May 10th. I'm going to be there, too, along with Tim Carpenter and Tom Hayden. And there's going to be a bunch of us. I've got a whole list here.
Oh, that's very cool.
This is 10th anniversary of PDA.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jim Hightower.
Oh, all right. Very cool. May 10th. Okay. The House passed a bill preventing terrorists from entering the U.S. as U.N. ambassadors. This is designed to go towards that guy from Iran that was appointed as United Nations ambassador and supposedly was involved in holding on to the Americans at the start of the Reagan administration, end of the Carter administration.
Well, this would be a great opportunity to open an investigation into whether Bill Casey actually negotiated with the Ayatollah, as President Bonnie Sauter has said, who was the president of Iran in 1980.
Well, it passed unanimously in the Senate, so nobody wants to deal with this.
Oh, really?
And I think unanimous in the House, and I think it was also unanimous in the Senate. Yes, can you imagine?
Well, who wants to be on record for saying, yeah, sure, let terrorists in as ambassadors? So it's like, it's amazing. It's amazing. Politics in this town, huh?
Politics in this town are amazing, but I think we can't afford to make that kind of thing if we're going to keep the UN in New York.
I agree. Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News. Thank you, Ellen. And goods for the old goat.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The Republicans just passed the Paul Ryan budget. This is fascinating. I just got this email. In fact, let me just pull this thing up and share this with you. Oh, you have the printout. Thank you. Basically, the Paul Ryan budget would cut taxes for millionaires by an average of $87,000, raise taxes for middle-class families with kids by an average of $2,000, would do away with drug savings for seniors. More than 4.3 million seniors would have to pay more for their prescription drugs by reopening the Medicare donut hole. And it goes through a whole long list of things here. I can get into this a little later, but Dr. Alex McFarland is on the line with us. He's the director of Christian Worldview and Apologetics at the Christian Worldview Center, North Greenville University, author of 10 Issues That Divide Christians. His website, Alex McFarland, McFarland, FARLAND.com. And Dr. McFarland, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you, Tom. Thank you for having me.
You wrote this piece saying, and I quote, enrollment deadline, you're talking about Obamacare, is a mischaracterization. Instead, you say that the more accurate description is the deadline for becoming further ensnared in government control. That apparently you think that Christians should not take advantage of benefits that the government offers, like subsidized health care, for example. Do I have that
sure.
right?
Yeah, I wrote a book called 10 Issues That Divide Christians and interviewed a lot of people trying to set forth a biblical position on a lot of kind of front page issues, one of which is two issues in the book. What did the founders intend the role of religion to be in public life? And another was social justice or compassion. And yes, as a Christian and as a patriot, I am concerned that now 1/6 of the American economy is under the purview of the U.S. government. And that so many citizens now, including many Christians, still see the answer to life's challenges and needs as the government. And so I really think that the vision of the government being able to really solve some of the greatest human needs doesn't take into account human fallibility and human sin. And the opportunity for so much abuse. And then as we are watching more and more of our income, the America, hardworking Americans that work to provide for their family, there's so much really confiscation of wealth, redistribution of wealth. And the Affordable Care Act is just really the coalescence of 45 to 50 years of growth of big government.
Well, it certainly is there is a substantial element of redistribution of wealth in there. And so if you see this as a Christian as something that's absolutely wrong, let me ask you, will you stop taking my tax dollars in order to subsidize your organization by voluntarily giving up your tax exempt status?
Well, I went through graduate school and didn't take a penny of government money anyway, and 18 years ago had $58 in the world. And,
but right now your organization is being subsidized by me. Will you give up that subsidy?
Well, you know, from the beginning, churches have been nonprofit because they contribute to the common good. And
the tax exemption for churches was passed and it was put through in 1964 by Lyndon Johnson in an explicit deal with churches in the United States that if they would not engage in political activity, he would give them tax exemption, you know, through the IRS. Prior to that,
back to the colonial times, churches didn't pay tax because they contributed to the
common good. It's been on and off, but I'm saying if you think as a Christian that it's wrong to take welfare from the government, will you stop taking my tax dollars? Will you stop having me pay for your police protection, your fire protection, your streets
as you and I both know, Tom, the building of infrastructure is not the same thing as rewarding inactivity, and there is so much abuse in American welfare. Building infrastructure is fine,
but you're not going to give up your welfare.
This is not for a church to be tax exempt in all the good they do. I've spoken to more than 1,400 churches.
If you want to be tax exempt, you can give up your tax exempt status.
The clothing closets and Alex, all the good that churches do, they more than give back to the community.
Dr. McFarland, you can do exactly the same thing that I do. This show is a for-profit company. But we never show any profit. 97% of all for-profit companies in the United States don't show a profit. What do? At the end of the year, you say, hey, look, we've got about a $16,000 profit. This was 2 years ago. This year, we ended up with a loss. But, 2 years ago, we had a profit at the end of the year. So you said, what are we going to do? We're going to upgrade some of our equipment. We're going to buy $16,000 worth of equipment. So, if you want to run your church and give away to the poor at the end of the year exactly whatever you brought in, you don't have to pay any taxes. But maintaining a tax exempt status is a form of welfare. But apparently you don't want to give that up. I get it, and I understand, and I wouldn't either.
What Christians agree on is that we have an obligation to care for our fellow man. Churches and Christian leaders, we want to see sick people get medicine. We want to see hungry people be fed. We want to see.
Then why do you oppose Obamacare?
Because we believe that the better way to do it is to do what our public schools won't do. Our public schools are telling millions of young people there is no absolute morality, there is no right and wrong, and we are having a lawless society.
How did we move from how did you just segue from a conversation about why you oppose Obamacare to something you think is being said in public schools?
The last thing that we need to tell an emerging generation is that the answer is government and social utopianism and the iron fist of socialism controlling our lives.
So you disagree with Peter?
What we need to
you disagree with Jesus's number one disciple?
Okay, please explain what in the world that is supposed to be.
1 Peter 2:13. You're not familiar with this verse?
Okay, tell me.
Submit yourself to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether it be to the king as supreme or unto governors. For so is the will of God, honor the king.
Clearly, Romans 13 and 1 Peter 2 talk about submitting to authorities, but then it goes on in 1 Peter 2:15, just so we can give the whole context, Tom. It says, this is the will of God, that by doing well you will put to silence the arguments of the foolish men. What it's talking about is living out morally. You've got to recognize, and this is what our president doesn't recognize.
Wait a second. You just misquoted that. It's not by doing well you may silence the ignorance of foolish men. It's by well doing. In other words, doing good deeds. It goes on to say, and as free and not using your liberty for a cloak of maliciousness, but as the servants of God, honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king.
The Christian ethic of compassion is based on what our founding fathers recognized, is there has got to be morality. And if you want a free culture, you've got to have a moral foundation. And if you want a moral foundation, you've got to recognize God.
No, you don't.
We can't have it both ways.
Humans all over the world have recognized morality forever, particular God.
Self-evident truth, in other words, undeniable. We hold these truths to be self-evident. We're endowed by our Creator, capital C. Our founding fathers recognized the biblical God, the biblical view of morality. They would never have gone for gay marriage. They would never have gone for this societal anarchy that we find ourselves on the brink of.
I think you're wrong.
They certainly would never have gone for.
I think you're absolutely wrong. And
the American Revolution was fought because of taxation without representation. Which
Please. Read your history. The American Revolution was fought. The Boston Tea Party was a revolt against the East India Company getting the largest tax break in the history of the world so that they could wipe out small entrepreneurs in New England.
Oh, Tom, you're the greatest. You can pick and choose just to suit the...
No, it's true. It's true. Look, read the history of the Boston Tea Party. It was a revolt against a tax break. They were trying to... Anyhow, Dr. Alex McFarland, hang on just a second. I didn't properly thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dr. McFarland, thank you for being with us. AlexMcFarland.com is the website. Thank you, sir.
Tom, you're awesome.
Good talking with you. We'll be back. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, back to our child. I love debating the Bible. Seriously, you know, back in the day, back long ago in the day, back in the early 70s. I'm not going to go into it. Anyway, Jeff in Spring Hill, Florida. Hey, Jeff, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind?
Yeah, you're talking about things Republicans may have done that people still like, and I understand that exhaust emissions are a subject of debate, but perhaps Eisenhower's interstate system might qualify. What do you think?
That has already been proposed, and I will acknowledge that.
Oh, I'm sorry, I missed that.
Yeah, I'll acknowledge that. The Interstate Highway Act of 1956 might be, but see, here's the problem. Eisenhower wrote, you know, famously he wrote that letter to his brother Edgar about how there's a small group of oil men down in Texas who think that we can do away with labor support, with farm support, and Social Security. Their number is small and they are stupid. He was referring to the Hunt brothers. And, you know, Eisenhower would not be considered a Republican by today's standards.
Well, I understand that. Okay, let me just throw you one quick one. Even though Eisenhower regretted it later on, perhaps his nomination of Earl Warren, who decided Brown versus Board of Education, might qualify.
Yeah, Earl Warren was actually, you know, one of the. I mean, there were some cases where Earl Warren was on the wrong side of history, I think, but by and large, Earl Warren. It's one of the reasons why Daddy Coke came back from making his millions with Joe Stalin and helped fund the John Birch Society and put these posters, all, you know, these giant billboards all over the country that said impeach Earl Warren. Because of Brown v. Board of Education in 1954 that Earl Warren, God forbid, said that, you know, black kids and white kids should go to the same schools. And this has got to be communist.
I remember seeing those posters, especially in the South, even into the mid-60s.
Oh, I remember them as a kid. I mean, I was born in 51. And I remember them as a kid throughout the late 50s and the early 60s in Michigan. Big billboards that said impeach Earl Warren.
Yeah.
You know, and then this was this.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm a few years older than you are, but even in Arkansas, I was living in Arkansas as a kid. My dad was in the Air Force, and we used to see those huge billboards and impeach Earl Warren, even in the early 60s, almost mid-60s.
And what's so ironic about it is if you read decisions like Brown and you read many of the other decisions that Warren helped write majority decisions on, he was just a very thoughtful and careful judge. I mean, a jurist. He was not an ideologue. And in fact, I think he might have been arguably the last Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court who was not an ideologue. Rehnquist was certainly an ideologue. I don't know who was between. Go ahead.
Warren had no previous judicial experience either. He was governor of California.
That's right. That's right. I had forgotten that. And a Republican. But, you know, he was not an ideologue. Jeff, thanks very much for the call and for the interesting conversation. And I think, you know, I'll give that to you. Eisenhower, the 1956 Highway Act. Although you need the Democrats to pass it, because they can control the House of Representatives at the time. 20 minutes past the hour.
Republicans love to have Jesus as a candidate. Wouldn't Jesus be the best Republican ever? Think of Jesus Christ, a peaceful, radical, nonviolent revolutionary who hangs around with lepers, hookers, and crooks, who never spoke English, was never an American citizen, anti-capitalism, anti-death penalty, anti-public prayer. Yes, he was, motherfucker, Matthew 6:5, anti-public prayer, but never once anti-gay and didn't mention abortion and was a long-haired, brown-skinned, it's in the book, homeless Middle Eastern Jew. For president of this country. That guy couldn't get a job at House of Pancakes.
That was John Fugelsang, one of the great talents of our day. We are all very fortunate that John Fugelsang is sharing this you know, this planet with us, breathing the same air we are. So, Doug, in St. Peter's, Missouri. Hey, Doug, thanks for listening to TuneIn Radio. What's up?
Hey, Tom, hold on 1 second. I got to get out of the kitchen because my wife's on the phone.
Okay, no problem.
All right, I'm there. You know, I was telling Danielle that I think that they're the Republican Party. My father was a Republican. He voted Republican up until I gave him Molly Ivan's book, El Bushko. Hmm. And he changed. And they've dumbed down the citizenry so much that it's astounding. And our fathers and our grandfathers would not have put up with this stuff. The preacher you had on there, misquoted the Bible and all. You know, wasn't it Upton Sinclair, one of those guys who said, you know, when fascism comes to America, it'll come wrapped in a flag, carrying a Bible.
Yep.
So my point to you is this. We've always had these people. But the proof is in the pudding. Have you ever watched well, I know you don't watch TV. You haven't even seen what was the Jimmy Stewart movie?
Yeah, well, I do watch some TV, but it's, mostly news, unfortunately.
Yeah, I do the same thing.
Yeah.
But go back and look at Groucho Marx's You Bet Your Life.
Oh, I remember those from when I was a little kid. You're talking in the old black and white shows where the duck would come down?
Yes, sir. Yes.
I remember that from being 6 years old. I mean, you know, I can't quote anything from it other than, you know, him with the cigar and You Bet Your Life, that line. But
do you remember listening to the questions that he asked? And these were people who were just high school. You know, they weren't all college graduates. Do you remember the questions they asked?
No, I don't.
You watch an episode of that, and it's like the knowledge there, they would be on Jeopardy's Tournament of Champions. Because the questions that these people were answering, that you could tell that there was so much more.
You mean the average person was more well-informed in the 50s than they are today?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I think you're right.
By a huge amount. Yeah. And it just stumps me to see that the people who get, I mean, it just blows my mind what that guy was saying. I'm still kind of shaking over that. But the people who are out there, who don't understand that without an informed citizenry, without people listening to Fox so-called news, which is proven wrong every single time they open their mouth, that they're getting such a turned rendition of history. They're not learning the real history of what's going on. They're not learning what is even in current affairs, what's real.
No, I agree. And I think that, A, you know, we need to put, you know, more money and smarter money into our schools, although our schools are doing very well right now. We have the highest high school graduation rate in the history of the republic. We need to be, between Reagan stopping the Fairness Doctrine, which said that news had to actually be news. It couldn't be infotainment, and it couldn't be, you know, hey, we're going to do a news story about this network's parent company's new movie coming out. You know, that kind of thing. It used to be basically, you know, you'd lose your license for doing that kind of thing. And now, you know, that's normal. That and then the Telecommunications Act of 96 and then Reagan stopping enforcement of the Sherman Act with regard to media and these giant media monopolies. It's interesting. I had Rusty Humphries on my TV show last night. He's a conservative talk show host. And he was talking about how the radio industry has been destroyed by consolidation, and it's you know, right across the whole media landscape. But Doug, I got to move along. Thank you for your call. Excellent points, all that you made. Donald in Aurora, Illinois. You wanted to talk about Dr. McFarland?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. The guy that was just on the preacher. I cannot believe, you know, it just aggravates the heck out of me. I'm so glad he wasn't sitting across the table from me. He would have had a hard time getting his words out with my fist in his mouth. You know, it gets me so angry with these so-called politicians that use the word Christian. Why don't they just say the word Republican?
That's he was a Christian who's not a politician. He's a pastor. He's the director of Christian Worldview and Apologetics for the Christian Worldview Center at North Greenville University. He's a professional religious guy.
Oh, really? Well, it sounds like any kind of Bible he was reading probably was probably written by Paul Ryan, because he sounded just like him. And how many churches does he think is going to help the amount of poor and starving and people that need help in this country? There isn't one. They would never be able to accommodate as many people as we have that are.
Well, in fact, here's a statistic for you, Donald, that, I think may add to your outrage level. The total aggregate amount of all the food kitchens and the food pantries in the United States, the total value of all of them every year, what they give away, this is all the private charity, is $5 billion. The amount that the Republicans just cut food stamps by was $4 billion.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Well, that's all I had to say, Tom. Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that point out. Boy, it nailed into the cross, and you wouldn't answer it when you asked him, what about my tax dollars? That was beautiful.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you, Donald. I appreciate it. And thank you very much for the call. Thanks for listening to WCPT. hold their feet to the fire. Is that the old saying? I don't know why they don't just say, sure, we'll stop being tax exempt. Well, then they'd have to pay property taxes, though. I mean, you know, even if you don't make any money, you don't have to pay any income tax, but you have to pay property taxes if you own the land. So maybe that's his problem. Maybe that's why. I don't know what is in his heart. I can't guess. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Back with more of my comments, the news of the day, and your thoughts about my thoughts and about the news of the day right after this. Taking back to mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you, and we've got a lot on the table. For the first couple hours of our program, I went through this list of all these 35 things the list was much longer than that, that Democrats had done for Americans. Medicare, Medicaid, welfare benefits, civil rights, unemployment insurance, National Labor Relations Board, 8-hour workday, 5-day work week, workplace breaks, overtime pay, workers' compensation, Americans with Disability Act, Holiday Pay, Medical Leave Act, Prevention of Child Labor, Minimum Wage Act, Workplace Safety, OSHA, Affirmative Action, Women's Rights, Tax Fairness, Veterans Pay and Benefits, Consumer Protection, Consumer Bill of Rights, Gun Laws, Preventing Felons from Getting Weapons, Credit Card Holder Bill of Rights, Funding Our Schools, Grants for Low-Income People to Attend College, Environmental Regulations, the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, vetoed by Nixon, by the way, Financial Regulation, although Congress overrode his veto, Financial Regulation of Wall Street, Affordable Care Act, Hate Crime Legislation, Children's Health Legislation, Voting Rights Act, National Registration Voter, largest deficit cut in history, that was Bill Clinton, took us to actually a budget surplus, the Clayton Antitrust Act, Woodrow Wilson, Securities and Exchange Act, National School Lunch Program. Can you think of anything that the Republicans have done in the last 100 years that benefits the average working person more than it does the billionaires? And for 2.5 hours now, people have been calling and going, well, maybe could it be that in 1972, Nixon raised Social Security by 20%? Well, no, because 10 years later in 1982, Reagan cut it by 20%. Nixon just did that to win an election. Could it be that Nixon lowered speed limits in 1974? No, down to 55. No, actually, it was Jerry Ford who did it in 1974. No, because in the 80s, Reagan threatened to withhold federal highway funds if they didn't raise speed limits. You know, the oil billionaires wanted to be sure that people were getting less efficient use of their cars. And so the one thing that people have called and said, you know, this might be something that was worth, you know, the Republicans did right, was the Eisenhower Highway Act of 1956, but that was passed with the Democratic legislature. But it was Eisenhower's initiative. It wasn't the Republican Party's initiative, but it was Eisenhower's initiative. So, anyway. Richard in Whittier, California, listening on KPFK. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Hey, how are you doing today?
Good. You wanted to talk about the separation of politics and religion?
Yes, there's a confusion about the separation of politics and religion versus the separation of church and state.
Okay.
Those are two very different things. The separation of church and state only applies to the state. It does not apply to individuals or private institutions, including the church. In fact, the church's speech is protected by the First Amendment. Now,
there is a limit to that, Richard, and that is if they want to have the benefit of not having to pay income taxes or property taxes or sales taxes, if they want to have that benefit, in exchange for that, this was the deal LBJ made in 64, in exchange for that, under the Internal Revenue Code, they cannot engage in nakedly political activity.
That is primarily, and I'm not sure on the details, but that is primarily involves candidates for public office.
Yes.
You know,
you're correct.
Raise money for a candidate.
You're correct. They could still politic with regard to things like abortion, and they do. You're right.
Yes. Right. And I'm actually a member of the UCC, and that church is very involved in politics.
Right.
I think one of these things about engaging in social services, I think there are two forms of service. There's social and then there's public service.
Right.
And a lot of churches have decided, well, we're going to do this thing and sort of help the poor, and then we'll work and help the empire during the week, and then on the weekends we'll help the victims of empire, and we won't do anything to make change.
Right.
But the church really needs to get involved in more public service, and progressive Christians really need to get more involved and get more organized and not be so skittish.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you. By UCC, you're talking about the United Church of Christ?
That's correct.
Yeah, which is arguably the most progressive, fully Christian denomination in the United States. In fact, when they first started running ads, saying that gay people were to be embraced in their church, and this was years ago, there was hysteria in America around that. Yeah, excellent. Richard, I agree with you. Excellent point and well made. Thank you very much for calling and making it. Sandra in Brooklyn, New York, listed on WBAI. Hey, Sandra.
Hello, Tom. How are you? I love you. I've been listening to you for so long now.
Well, thank you.
First time calling.
Thank you.
I just wanted to comment about, I find it very offensive that when Republicans refer to God, they automatically assume that everybody's a Christian.
Yes. Well, or at least they're referring to their...
Everybody's not a Christian.
Yeah.
So you know, they assume that, and morality has nothing to do with religion.
I agree. In fact, Jefferson made a comment. He said, we didn't have to, when we were founding the Republic, I'm paraphrasing, but this is pretty close to his original quote. When we were founding the Republic, we didn't need to look into musty letters or ancient documents. We looked in our hearts and found morality inscribed
exactly.
There.
So if your God is Muslim, Buddhist, whatever, you know, it is whom you perceive your God to be. And as long as you're being living up to whatever are the teachings of your religion, and they all have at their core love,
yeah,
and being good to your neighbor, treating each other as you treat yourself.
Yep.
So, you know, if you were even to just adhere to those rules, you know, they have no leg to stand on.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, when they came to Jesus and said, which is the most important of the commandments, he said, you know, love your neighbor as yourself and love God with all your heart. Yeah, absolutely. Although, again, I don't want to turn this show into Bible study, but you're right, Sandra. Thank you for calling and making that point. It's brilliant. It's excellent. Richard in Cathedral City, California, watching us on Free Speech TV. What's up, Richard?
I was listening to one of your callers. He mentioned that Psalms 13, That's not the main reason I called, but Psalm 13 was used by the Nazis to convince the churches, to convince the people that whatever Hitler did was a good thing.
Oh, you're talking about 2 Peter?
Yes.
Yeah.
Psalms 13. But anyway, okay. When you ask a Republican if they've done anything wrong, they always say that they're not responsible for anything.
Uh-huh.
And my comment back to them, I say they've been irresponsible about everything, especially our economy and stuff.
Well, this is where I'm continuing my search here. I've been, I started this in 2012. We actually had a contest, and I was going to give away a book to the person and who, one of my books to their choice of any of my titles. To anybody who could name one thing that the Republican Party had institutionally agreed on, Republican elected officials had promoted, and it had passed through the legislature and been signed by the president that benefited the average working person more than it did billionaires. And maybe the Eisenhower Highway Act, maybe Medicare Part D, although Medicare Part D is a $600 billion boondoggle for the pharmaceutical company because it doesn't allow the government to negotiate on pharmaceuticals. So, Medicare has to buy, brand name drugs at high prices, $1, $2, $10 a pill when Walmart can negotiate for 5 cents a pill. So, but your point is well taken, Richard. Thank you for the call. Jerry in Urbana, Missouri. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Oh, thanks for taking my call, Tom. You got a very enlightening program.
Thank you.
Okay, I wouldn't be critical of New Testament writings to a certain extent. It's almost, to me, seems like it's at a childish level in a lot of aspects. There's a lot of profound knowledge in Christian writings, matter of fact, in all the major world religions, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, a pursuer of traditional Christianity would want to look at all facts around the globe. There's a vast history in India about the man called Jesus. As a matter of fact, even a grave there at Anzamar or Shanarga.
Yeah.
That if we were going to look at real history, we have to pursue it factually.
Yeah, there's a whole I was going to say mythology, but it's more than that. Storyline around how those missing years, from when Jesus was 12 and showed up in the temple and said some profound things, and then he was 30 roughly and started his ministry, the Bible is silent. And the
right.
theory is that he went off to India and hung around with the gurus and came up with all of this, let's be a peaceful hippie and all share our stuff together and the stuff that he, kind of basically preached that killed.
There is vast history in India, in these other countries after the crucifixion that they're not even looking at these historians. I mean, look at Dr. Albert Schweitzer. He wrote a critical works in New Testament writings, I believe, in 1906 in search of the historical Jesus. And he was not only a theologian, he was a physician, too. And he had a lot of good points. It's hard to wade through his book, but it's interesting. But it's almost, to me, we're almost deadheaded. I mean, the Christian movement is almost deadheaded in looking at what's really out there and what could be availed to them and looking at these scriptures and other writings more intensely and more inclusively. That's
right.
What I'm saying.
Yeah, that's a good point, Jerry. Good point. This is Elaine Pagel's work is, if you're at all interested in Christianity, is fascinating. And the Gospel of Thomas is something that is really worth reading. We'll be back 15 minutes before you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And if you want to dig deeper into Judaism, the 10 Luminous Emanations, by Rabbi Isaac Luria. So there's brilliant Jewish mysticism stuff. And welcome back. Dwayne in Nixa, Missouri. You have a response to my challenge. What have the Republicans done for the average working person in the last 100 years? What is it?
Tom. If I remember correctly, Nixon implemented a wage and price freeze supposedly to eliminate inflation, which would help people on fixed income.
Yeah, although it didn't work, and he undid it.
Right. But he did try it.
Yeah, I don't think that qualifies. It's just like the guy who called and said Nixon took us off the gold standard. Nixon had no choice. The Arab oil embargo turned our economy upside down, And, you know, as the president, there were certain things he had to do. These were purely reactive. They would have been done by anybody, and they weren't done to help people. They were done to prevent the economy from going down in flames. But good try, Dwayne.
All right, good try.
You know, it's not a piece of legislation that was advanced, that had a philosophical underpinning. Good try, though. Mark in San Francisco, you have an idea?
I wanted to talk about the budget, Ryan.
Oh, the Paul Ryan budget that got passed today by the House of Representatives. Okay.
Yeah. Yes, Tom. And what I see in it is also trillions of dollars taken out of the economy that will definitely lead probably to a depression.
Yes, of course. And that's what they want. These guys want a Great Depression so that they can blame it on Barack Obama.
Well, you know what's interesting, Tom, is the one thing about this party is they just come right out and tell you what they want to do to you. And they want to eliminate, you know, they don't care if people die because they don't have health care. They don't care about Social Security, Medicare. They just come out and say it. And I don't know how people vote for them, Tom. It's to me, it's a mystery.
People vote for them because they watch Fox News and listen to right-wing talk radio, and they think that if they vote for Democrats that they're going to lose their guns and that their teachers are all going to be, gay men in drag who are teaching them that there's no God and that, or whatever. I mean, it's like black gay men in drag, in fact. It's the demonization of the other and the be afraid of the other is the core of what's in, you know, is what Republicans have to offer. And the whole reason they're doing this, the guns, gays, gods, God and all of the racial stuff, you know, the coded racial talk that the Republicans engage in. Paul Ryan was doing it just the other day, talking about, you know, our inner city men who are too lazy to work. All of this is done because they don't want to tell the truth about their real agenda, about what 99% of what they really are all about. The Republican Party is doing things on behalf of billionaires and taking money from working people and from the middle and upper middle class, taking money from them and giving it to the millionaires, the multimillionaires, and the billionaires. That's what they're about.
They got to forget about their Bibles because they're reaching for their wallet, their gun. It's, you know, while they're reaching for their gun, they're ready to take your wallet. And that's what they're all about, Tom. And also,
yeah,
one last thing on John Fugelsang.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree. He's awesome.
Yeah, John is one of the great talents of our day. He used to have me on his show from time to time when he was on Current TV, and it was always an honor to be on there with him. And I've seen him perform live when he and Stephanie Miller came to town here to D.C. and did a show. And he's so good. He is just so good. So thank you very much, Mark. Great talking with you. We'll be back 10 minutes before the hour here on the Tom Hartman Show. Where smart people get their news, the Tom Hartman Program, and Jesse in Miami, Florida. Hey, Jesse, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Hey, thanks for being so positive and optimistic. Hey, Elizabeth Warren, she really hit the nail on the couple of heads with the speech when she said, "We helped you build it."
Yeah.
I would like to expand on that and say that, hey, if we help you build it, what gives you the right to own us workers of 99% is renter slaves?
Yep.
And as a given example, if I cure cancer, found a cure for cancer, that would make me more powerful beyond most people's dreams. But yet I could still be a racist, a fascist, sexist, you name it, but I could still control the world. So, you know, it's time for us to challenge the individual private property rights of these 1% saying if you build a widget, anything, come up with a cure, mm-hmm, and then you have the power to have people come work for you,
yeah,
but then you control them.
Yeah, let's be very clear. I don't have a problem with somebody making a lot of money, particularly off their own creativity, but I think that there should be a limit. And in my mind, the limit is $1 billion. Anybody who has over $1 billion, I think we should have 100% tax on that wealth. I mean, why does anybody need over $1 billion? And with that, you know, if we were to tax all the billionaires to say, okay, you're only a one billionaire, you're no longer an 80 billionaire, we would have enough money to eliminate poverty in the United States. And I think that that would be a good thing. And it would be a good thing for the billionaires, too. I mean, who wants to be a rich person in a poor country? And, well, apparently there's a few of them who want to be. But I'm with you. Jesse, well said. Thank you very much. In fact, we've got a campaign, nobillionaires.com. You can check it out. Robert over in Great Court, South Carolina. Hey, Robert, what's up?
Yes, I have a comment and then a question.
Hmm?
Some time ago, our local newspaper went into their archives and dug out a photograph of a plantation owner standing on top of a wagon load of cotton with a black man managing the team.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the issue, I think, with the wealth is not who picked that cotton, but rather who owns it.
Right.
And the question I have is, you mentioned William Rehnquist a while ago,
mm-hmm.
and I saw his last interview, and the interviewer asked, what was his proudest moment? And he said when he appointed George Bush president. So I'd like to know if you remember that and who did the interview and what station.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that, Robert, but maybe somebody here will, and if somebody tosses it out today or tomorrow, I'll get back to you with it. You might want to check our newsletter. It's free, and we don't pass out the list or sell it or anything like that over at tomharbin.com. And very often when callers ask questions like that and then somebody in the chat room answers the question, Sue puts it into the newsletter. So you might want to check that out, too. Or there's, you know, Sue's stack. It runs a day or so late, but it's right there on our website. Thank you for the call. Sarah in Minneapolis, listening to KTNF. Hey, Sarah, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. See, your conversation with Dr. McFarland reminded me that originally the church was supposed to be the establishment that provided welfare for those in need, but the church didn't want to do it. So my understanding is that's why the government stepped in and created the welfare system.
Yeah.
So it says to me that when Christians had the chance to use the church as an avenue to help those in need, they didn't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And now they don't want those who are in need to even use the government welfare system. So I don't know how they think people are supposed to get help.
Right. Well, and this is the problem, and I don't understand how somebody can be a Republican and a Christian. I just,
right.
You know, I genuinely don't understand that. But, Sarah, thank you for the call. Excellent point. Dominic in Chicago, listening to WCPT. Hey, Dominic, what's up?
Hi, Tom. It's a long time I've actually talked to you. It's been about a year and a half, but I just wanted to add, I noted, I always listen to you, literally, you're my saving grace of each day of my life.
Well, thank you, Robert.
So what I wanted to tell you was, you had asked the question, what good have Republicans done?
For working
and
people.
I sent you a huge list of about probably 35 things, at least about a year and a half ago. The only thing I was able to find, Tom, that the Republicans have done, and he did it by mistake, not even realizing that he actually did it, was George Bush. And what he actually did was he saved us from importing rare species of woods into the United States, which is why Gibson was not able to use Brazilian cherry and Brazilian walnut on their guitars anymore.
Well, that's interesting. So there was a law passed to protect the endangered hardwoods in the deep jungles.
Right, but he didn't even realize that that's what he actually was signing into law.
Oh, that's interesting. Did you send me this list of 35 things that I used 2 years ago on the air?
Yes, I did.
Well, thank you, Dominic. I appreciate
that's
that.
All right.
Okay,
and
in fact,
there's actually you didn't put in there NASA. NASA was actually created by the Democrats as well.
Oh yeah, NASA. You know, Jack Kennedy called for that in his inaugural address. That's
right.
Great. Okay, Dominic, thank you. Thank you for
Take care,
that.
Tom.
Good talking with you. I appreciate it. Bruce in Brea, California. Hey, Bruce.
Hi. Back in 1957, the Russians put up the Sputnik satellite.
Right.
Shortly after that, there was a lot of push for science, to have money for science in education in the schools. And along came Eisenhower's National Defense Education Act. He
You're
had
right.
to put defense in the name of the title to get the support it required.
I was a beneficiary of that.
Yeah, you too? Me too?
Yeah, I was pulled out of regular public classes for about 4 years. I think I was in second grade at that time. and run through this super fast, you know, basically, you know, learn as much as you want, as fast as you want. It was a hoot. They ran out of money, though, you know, when the Vietnam War started. Bruce, thank you for the... You were the same thing happened to you, Bruce.
Yeah.
That's great.
All the way through graduate school, I'm
oh, wow.
out of money.
Wow, that's great. I only had it until I hit junior high school. And anyhow, Bruce, thank you very much for the call. Coming up tomorrow, it's Friday. That means it's Brunch with Bernie, our weekly town hall meeting with America's Senator, Senator Bernie Sanders, taking your call, plus Anything Goes Friday, where there's lots to Anything Goes. Don't forget, democracy begins with you. Get out there, get active. Go over to pdamerica.org and sign up. We'll be back tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.
Tag, you're it. Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.